Two personalities debating today's biggest geek topics. This is Project Nerds Versus.
Welcome, 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 ladies and nerds, to another episode of Versus. I'm Iggy.
I'm Tyler.
And we're here to, well, discuss, maybe battle, some of this week's big pop culture topics. So, Tyler, how's it going?
Not too bad. I was actually just looking through the list, the rundown for this week, and I'm trying to see if there's any, I don't know. I don't know if there's going to be any actual disagreement or not. There's a couple that could go either way. I don't know. We'll see.
I got some negative things to say about a big blockbuster, so maybe we'll argue there. But in fact, why don't we just get started with it?
Okay.
Let's do it. Godzilla and Kong arrived in theaters, as we talked about, and HBO Max last weekend, setting a pandemic mark. I think it was 48.5 million over the five-day domestic and breaking the 100 million mark overseas the previous week. Huge numbers, especially big after all the talking we've done about the theater situation. As expected, not much on the story, too much human interactions just like in the previous ones, but this time plenty of lizard on monkey action and plenty of clear lizard on monkey action. No smoke or closing doors or any of the other problems that cause us to not see the other fights in the older movie. So I guess I'm rambling now. Question is, Godzilla versus Kong, did it live up to the hype for you, or was it a waste of time?
Slight quibble. King Kong is a gorilla, which is a great ape, not a monkey. So
lizard on ape action, my bad.
It's not ape action. I guess the question, if the question is, did it live up to the hype? I guess the question would be, was there really that much hype? I mean, there was hype in the sense that this was a big HBO Max tentpole that they've really like advertised really hard, but like, I don't know that any of these, even King of the Monsters was definitely like, they are the def. I think after the first, after the 10,000th reboot of Godzilla that we got, that was technically the prequel to
the 2014 King of Monsters, one.
The one with Elizabeth Olsen and Aaron Taylor Johnson, all those people, Bryan Cranston. That was one was pretty hyped. And I think after what we got there, I think all the rest of them have been kind of like, I don't know. I don't know how much hype there was. Here's the thing. It got a lot of people in theaters, and it apparently on early numbers, or at least numbers that Warner Brothers is giving us, it got a lot of people to watch it on HBO Max, which is what they're going for. But I have a confession to make. I still haven't watched it yet. I don't have any intent. I mean, I'm going to watch it. I want to watch it. King of the Monsters was such a like silly. I mean, here's the problem. And I had this conversation at work when someone was giving me a hard time about having not watched it yet. It's going to be a while. I don't know that in the next however long, if you want the best possible kaiju movie that modern technology can bring, just go watch the first Pacific Rim again on repeat. I don't know that you can top that for big robot fighting big monster. The way that the cinema, and it's not just like the story or the special effects. There's something very specific about the way they gave the monsters and the robots weight, the camera angles they used, the like really good use of like all those things. They move slowly because of how big they were, the camera angles they chose, and just the weight and fierceness of those battles. And I feel like everything that has a big thing fighting another big thing since then, whether it be Power Rangers or whether it be Godzilla or, you know, King of the Monsters, whatever, has been a letdown. Even like this, don't watch the second Pacific Rim. It's even worse than any of those ones I just listed. But I got way off topic and just tell people to watch Pacific Rim. Here's the thing. You've watched it. Tell me, did it live up to the hype, Iggy?
Well, you've got a lot of things you're talking about. Did it live up to the hype? I don't know, because I think this was a movie you shouldn't have seen in theaters. And I did watch it at the comfort of my own home for many reasons. I'm still a month away or so from the theater. I could have seen where I would have enjoyed it more in the theater, because there were definitely moments to where I was like, oh, with the proper, like if I would have bought this on 4K, even with my surround sound, it would have even made a difference. It's just a matter of streaming it, and it didn't have a lossless audio track. You brought up a lot of things there. And this movie, the first thing I'm going to say is I'm going to give credit to Warner Brothers for listening to people. We talked about, you know, the Snyder Cut in the past and stuff like this. Each time we've had a new Godzilla movie or even Kong, Skull Island, we've gotten a little bit more of what people have said was lacking from the previous ones. And then to tie it all together, the action in it was very Pacific Rim-like, not good like Pacific Rim, but it had that Godzilla was moving slower. There were some other things that happened. That was everything. The angles, the shots like that, like you said, I don't think it could ever be Pacific Rim, because you mentioned Del Toro and he's in the world with Iñárritu and Cuarón, to where their cinematography and ability to paint a scene is just unmatched almost. And there was a lot that they borrowed from even the Marvel universe, which was weird in terms of the way the action played out and stuff. But as in terms of a movie, good Lord, was I bored out of my mind just waiting for those couple of fighting scenes. It was a terrible movie. I felt it was, of all these movies we mentioned, maybe Skull Island has the best plot of the four in the new franchise so far. And that's, I guess, like when we talk about the DC movies, saying the Snyder Cut was better, didn't take much. That's kind of what Skull Island has going for it. I was ready to argue for this because I'm ready to bash the hell out of this movie. There was a couple cool scenes. The rest of it, it's garbage. Like when it got done, I was just like, I hated it. I hated it. I wanted to give it maybe a 1 or a 2 out of my 10-point scale.
Did they at least lean into the badness a little bit? Because that was that's the one redeeming factor of King of the Monsters. King of the Monsters is a little self-serious a lot of times, especially like Charles Dance as the villain is a little too self-serious, and some of the other characters. But a lot of the other characters, specifically Bradley Whitford's character and a lot of the other ones, really lean into the camp. Like, we're in a kaiju movie, like, let's lean into it. And the trailers for this made me think like they're going to play it too straight. And to be fair, of the two, King Kong is definitely like the American monster, where Godzilla is definitely like, he's a Japanese like cultural icon.
Right.
And the older versions of like the original, you know, Japanese version of Godzilla versus Kong, it's definitely a movie about Godzilla. And I've definitely heard from people, this was definitely a movie about Kong.
I would say they do, without being too many spoilers, we all knew that they were going to both be our lovable heroes in the end, that they weren't going to both be the villain characters. They definitely set up Godzilla to be the villain, though, for the course of the movie, for the match, and King Kong to be the hero. He is definitely painted as the sympathizer, heroic, communicates with the child, all the type of stuff. So, yes, definitely Kong was the one they're leading to. But as we've talked about on this podcast and many other podcasts, and I've talked about with my kids, like, in Kong's not in the league of Godzilla. You're talking about a nuclear powered dinosaur dragon here, like,
versus again, just a big ape.
Giant ape. Yeah. But so they try to make up for that in some of the most cheesiest bullshit that I can't. But the fight sequences were cool. Kong holds his own and they give him reason. And part of what you bring up is the Pacific Rim thing. Kong obviously has the ability to move much faster than Godzilla, and they use that as part of his advantage in some of the way they fight.
That's cool. I will say the one thing that makes me for sure going to watch it is I've definitely heard that, I don't know if it's at the end of the movie or as a credit stinger, but they tease like the greatest kaiju villain monster of all time. They apparently tease Mechagodzilla is what I've heard. So
I have nothing further to say on it. There is definitely at least a tease there on it.
Okay, because Mechagodzilla is where it's at.
There you go. Yes, that is it's an interesting movie. I was not happy with it. If you would have seen it, we would have probably fought on it because you'd have probably had at least a little bit more enjoyment than I did.
I apologize for not having watched it, but I am going to get to it. So, but totally, I guess, removed from whether or not it's a good movie or not. Let's step back a minute, because it's been a topic on here almost every week, just because we're still, maybe this is the end of the pandemic, but we've had this conversation 10 times over. When will box office numbers look like box office numbers again? This movie almost did it. You said like almost 50 million. Is this a big enough number to open the door for like real blockbusters to get butts back in seats in theaters this summer?
All I'm going to say is 47 states, 47 of you listening to us, thank you. You guys are doing it. We're doing it. We're getting vaccinated. The three states that aren't, you know who you are. And we're just on the right path. So I think this came out at the right time. And is that type, again, it's that type of movie you want to see in theaters. So there's enough people that have either started to get vaccinated or are vaccinated. Theaters are still playing you're still playing it right with the spacing and everything in the seats to get people in it. And I think enough people went and we're comfortable probably like that. And over the next few weeks, I know you're almost done with your vaccine. I'm a couple weeks out. I think in May and June, we'll start to see that increase. And then what you were saying, July time, when we talked about, we had those 3 weeks in a row with Top Gun and Black Widow and all that. I really think we have a possibility for some big numbers those weekends.
Yeah. I think this was the first of many to like start ticking the number up. I mean, even pre-COVID, like 50 million in the opening 5 days isn't nothing. Like, that's a respectable number. So, I mean, that's definitely something worth, I think, speaking to. And I think you're right. I think this is the first pebble that's going to bring down like the, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, I think we're going to start seeing, like you said, come July, once we start seeing, we have a few, I think May has a couple possible like poppers. I think the trailers for Cruella have like pushed up a bunch of, they've had a lot of buzz. Quiet Place 2 is supposed to come out in theaters come May. And then I don't know. Is there anything I don't even know what comes out in June, honestly.
I honestly, it's a great question.
Fast and Furious still slated for June? Is that still a thing?
It's possible. I have Box Office Mojo pulled up, but the calendar is only showing through into May. Oh, here's the more button. This is super professional. Nope. It's only going into to May. June. We have in the Heights, which I think is, with it being an HBO Max release, could still be something people stay mostly home for. The Hitman's Wife, Bodyguard. That first one was a huge kind of like sleeper hit, so this one could pull some people. But you're right, June 25th is F9, and that's right at the edge of July there too. So those, I think enough people.
And if anything makes money, it's a Fast and the Furious movie.
Oh, so. That's for sure. That's for sure. So I think that's a good bet to really start seeing it. And maybe, I don't know, maybe June we'll see some of these other movies kind of get a re-release, like the theaters tried to do when they opened at the end of last summer, where they tried to kind of bring in some movies to do a soft open.
The Tenet days.
Right. Yes. So, and apologies, I kept the graphic off the screen for too long, but I wanted to get Godzilla and Kong on there. So I added it now.
Nice shot. That's a nice shot. There we go. Okay. So we're giving it a tentative yes, but we're on our way, but
I think so. We'll I think so. I think the summer is primed, especially with the vaccinations and everything as well, too. So, but let's talk about the SAG Awards. So those took place last weekend as we're edging closer and closer to the rescheduled Academy Awards. Obviously, this is the Screen Actors Guild, so there's no Best Picture or anything. The big award is Best Ensemble Cast, which, hooray, which I know you're probably happy about this too, Trial Chicago 7 taking it. But of course, Chadwick Boseman for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom got Best Actor. Ma Rainey's got Best Actress too. So anyways, it kind of felt like the acting categories at the Oscars were already foretold. Boseman, obviously a favorite there too. Did the SAG Awards give us any more insight to what to expect for the Oscars?
I think for the most part, they just solidified any money you put on anyone who's not Chadwick Boseman for lead actor, you're going to lose that money. I still am not ready to declare Best Actress a done deal. I think Carey Mulligan's probably still the favorite. I say that I there are basically three, maybe four Oscars I'm willing to right now say for sure done deal. That's Chadwick Boseman for Best Actor. That's Daniel Kaluuya for Best Supporting Actor. That's probably Chloe Zhao for Best Director. I think that's probably a lock right now. My fourth one, as much as I want to say it's probably Nomadland for Best Picture, I'm going to say it's an easy one, but another round for Best Foreign Picture. Like, those four are the only four Oscars I'm willing to, we're going to have a whole part Nerdcast about this. Like we do every year, picks, going to pick every one of them, but I can tell you between now and next week, those four choices aren't going to change for me. Whereas pretty much any other category, I could be swayed either way right now.
So I think the four you just mentioned are going to be across the board, all of us. I don't know. Adam likes to play it wild sometimes. So at least Bob and us do. I think the other guarantee is Soul.
As much as I love animated. Yeah, I was going to say, as much as I love Wolfwalkers, I could probably lock in Soul right now too. So I am excited because, I mean, I don't see that there's any way that Chloe Zhao doesn't win Best Director, which I think would be. It would be is going to be awesome, a big deal.
It's going to be historical for sure.
Not only as, you know, a woman and an Asian American winning a Best Director, but she's also made this movie, and on its like buzz alone is now making giant, you know, Marvel movies already. Like, I mean, her career is looking bright. So
yeah,
I'm excited for it.
I'm going to agree with you. I think the Chadwick Boseman one we felt already. And like you said, it cements it. The only thing for me is that I was sold on Carey Mulligan, and I'm still probably going to pick that when we do meet for next week's Nerdcast. However, it did make me hesitate for a second. I don't think the Trial of Chicago 7's ensemble cast winning is going to impact anything for Best Picture at the Oscars, mainly because when you look at the other possible winners for Best Ensemble Cast at the SAGs, like One Night in Miami, they're not even on the Best Picture list at the Oscars. So I agree with you. I don't think it influences too much, and much of my mind's probably already made up for what we're going to pick, which, one last plug there, Nerdcast next week, we're doing our Oscar picks. Remember, Bob has been beaten multiple times now by us two, actually. So yeah, be ready. It's going to be a close one. All right. You can move us on to the next.
Does Trial of Chicago 7, maybe this is a better conversation for this weekend, does Trial of Chicago 7 win a single Oscar? I think Best Adapted Screenplay is probably its, I mean, not Best Adapted, Best Original Screenplay is its best bet. Sorkin.
I really need to look at everything again. I think because Sorkin's such a regular player, and because of categories where we thought we were going to see the Oscar so white thing disappear, isn't really making them disappear. Yeah. That it's harder in those categories where you see filmmakers of color or movies starring large casts of color are likely going to dominate some of those awards. I don't know. We'll definitely break it down, like you said, this week.
All right. So, big news in streaming. Netflix, which has, you know, forever been the king of the mountain when it comes to streaming services, as of new reports in 2020, gave up almost a third of its market share. So it went down from having a 29% market share in the United States to 20%. Like, that doesn't seem like a big number, but like I said, that's a third basically of its user base overnight. Yep. Although the company still has 74 million subscribers in North America, services from Disney, Comcast, Warner Brothers, Paramount, everyone is starting to take their piece. Even Apple has gotten into the game, cutting out a little piece of it. We can talk what this means about the future, but I guess the big question is at the end, let's say 5 years from now, into 2025, is Netflix still king of the mountain?
Oh, see, I like this, and the question posed is because you're exactly right. It's going to be a long time before Netflix falls, but 5 years is a long time. And more of these platforms that are popping up are keeping their content exclusive. And remember, Netflix has got bills to pay soon because they've been taking that money to make the content, and they're going to have to pay up the bills. So that subscription cost is already going up. It's the most expensive one I pay for. While it's definitely not the one I watch the most, I wouldn't say it's the least one. I really think HBO has an opportunity, Warner Brothers here has an opportunity to kind of push towards the top. But if I'm going to make a safe bet, it's going to be Disney Plus. And the reason is in 5 years, how much Marvel and Star Wars content are we going to have on Disney Plus? We're going to have a lot of original content and ongoing series. I think Disney Plus is your safe bet to have edged out Netflix by 2025. Netflix, I think, still going to be significant, still be towards the top, but I think they lose that spot by then.
Yeah, I think that's a Disney. If I had to pick one, that's definitely one. It's definitely not going to be Paramount Plus. It's not going to be Peacock. It's not going to be Apple TV Plus. So, I mean, I think if anyone's going to unseat them, it's going to be Disney Plus. I think that's the only legitimate. Technically, Hulu is under that umbrella now because Disney owns pretty much most of it. And most people who have a subscription to Disney Plus, you bundle it with Hulu and ESPN Plus, you get them all together. I know how I do it. You're right. Netflix is definitely the one I pay the most for, partially because I get deals on a lot of the other ones, but also just because that's the one you subscribe to. I've had it forever, but you're right. I don't watch it like I used to. And part of the reason is outside of new movies and new series that are originals, they've lost all the comfort rewatch stuff that I would go back and watch. They got The Office is gone. None of those shows that people binged on Netflix that weren't Netflix shows are right. At the same time, like you said, Netflix still just keeps making it rain on creators. Like, if you are a creator right now, if you're someone who is making content for a major audience right now, like, Netflix is your best friend. Like, they're outbidding. I mean, our boy Ryan Johnson just got paid to make two more. I mean, that like Lionsgate had the rights to this thing, but Netflix just came in and just threw. I mean, everyone I think in the market agrees.
$50 million Yeah,
Netflix severely overpaid for two movies, but at the same time, they get exclusive rights to them now. And now in the new world of new streaming, like exclusivity is the only thing that matters. So are those kind of deals going to pay off, or when, like you said, the bills come due, are they going to regret throwing literally billions of dollars at content? But I mean, in the sense that it keep like, we can always complain for a long time that Hollywood was always hesitant to spend money on new things, original things, things that hadn't been done before. And then you have Netflix and Amazon out here just being like, nah, here's $1 billion. Go make a Wheel of Time TV show, or go make two more Knives Out. So, you know, maybe this is, I don't know, maybe this is a good thing. But like you said, if I had to, I think Netflix will still be number one. I think there's too much market inertia there. And they are making enough good creative, but maybe their creative output. I mean, you look at, we keep hearing about like how Apple has been going, just throwing their just mountains of money at some different projects. So maybe they start picking up some stuff. And I think it's possible that Paramount and HBO Plus and Peacock will be held back a little bit by the fact that they answer to honest to goodness, actual corporations that need to show growth and profits on a balance sheet. Like they are part of a bigger corporation, where Netflix has exactly one business, and that is make more people subscribe to Netflix. Whereas Disney Plus, Paramount Plus, Hulu, all those other ones are beholden to a company that does 50 other things. Whereas Netflix only has to do one thing to
good
win.
Point.
So.
Good point. I'll go with one follow-up question. I have like 30 actually that I think we could stem for this, because this is a great conversation. But my one question for you would be, where's your line on Netflix? When it hits a certain price, where are you saying, okay, I'm not doing this anymore?
I think if it gets over $14.99, that would be the last straw.
Okay. I was going to say 15, yeah.
Yeah, $14.99, because $14.99 is like peak amount of money that I'm willing to pay for like a game subscription. Like I paid $14.99 for a decade to play WoW. Like anything more than like a WoW subscription is too much money, I think. Right. I don't know why I chose that as the explanation, but I think anything over $14.99 is too much to pay monthly for any service, to be honest.
Okay. So. I'm with you too. I would have said, yeah, 15 was my hit like line. So, all right, well, let's actually, you kind of brought it up. We've been talking about the theater industry with the pandemic, but I want to go a little different direction, because something that you're excited for, which you'll give us a little history lesson here in a second, is the small African nation of Lesotho has released a film that is just getting praise. I mean, we're talking Vulture, New York Times, LA Times, The Guardian, countless of others talking about how great this is. Not a burial, it's a resurrection, which was written, directed, and edited by one man, Lomahang Jeremiah Mose. I'm going to say Mosesa. We keep talking about how the pandemic has impacted the theater industry, but one thing I don't think we've forgotten, because we've definitely enjoyed these movies and talked about it, but one thing we've forgotten to talk about is how it's impacted the ability to get these smaller independent movies, not only in some of these conversations for award season, but in front of a lot more people. And Nomadland might be a great example. In a normal year, would that have had the momentum it did this year? So question for you, you know, is this change in the way we're seeing things, is this going to be permanent? And are we going to have better access to these foreign and independent films in the far future?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of nuance in this question. I think the answer is yes and no, in the sense that obviously streaming has bifurcated and democratized the whole process, where it's just easier to get content now. Like seeing a foreign film once upon a time, like when you and I were in like high school and even college, involved either like, if you were lucky to have like the small independent theater in your college town, you could maybe pick up a print of a thing they showed for 1 week only. But a lot of times it involved, oh, we're going to drive to this city on this day to see a screening of this one French film that everyone is raving about, but it's literally the only place in 100 miles that we can see it. And so streaming, even before this year, was a huge boon to foreign cinema in general, at least in the sense of getting foreign films in front of American audiences and getting into that North American money stream. But at the same time, once things even start to get, once there's a window in there, big giant Hollywood corporations are going to find a way to squeeze everyone out and, you know, deal their exclusivity deals and stuff like that. I think a lot of these films, unless they're picked up by the Netflixes, and Netflix has been really good about picking up foreign television shows, foreign movies, and getting them in front of a live audience, whether it be, you know, big things like Lupin or things like that. They've done a really good job of being like, hey, you should watch this French show. It's really good. Or Dark would be an example. Things like Dark, things like Lupin, like getting those things in front of. So hopefully, and because they're a streaming first service and they're not like all their content is in-house, like they're going to do that. But I think, what's the word? Hollywood will find a way to push some of these things out, but it's cool that this is like a thing you can do now. Like we can just sit down and pull up, because previously not only did you need a boutique theater, but you needed an American distributor. And unless someone like a small boutique, like a Fox Searchlight or an A24 decided to pick up your movie, like you couldn't even get it into a theater without an American distributor. So the fact that you could just upload it onto Amazon and iTunes and Netflix and just call it a day and get it in front of people, like, is good for everyone involved. So I'm just excited that it's a Lesotho. Like you said, we were talking ahead of time. Once upon a time in grade school, with one of those years you had to like pick a country to do a report on, Lesotho is a country I picked because I thought it was super fascinating. For those who aren't aware, it is an enclave country. It means it is entirely enclosed with another country. It's a very small country, entirely enclosed by South Africa. It has a population of like 2 million people. It's the largest enclave independent nation in the world, ahead of both the Vatican and San Marino. And it's a really cool place. So if you're going to check it out, it's a constitutional monarchy. King Leslie the Third, I think, is the monarch right now. Anyway, Lesotho is a cool country. So it's fascinating. I was just excited to, I know there's like one country in Africa that I know a lot about, and it's Lesotho. I could tell you
it's
about
crazy.
Some of
their exports. It's crazy. That's the one. That's you know what? I was going to disagree with you, but you made some strong points there. I think you're right. If there is a bully, you know, we talk about American industry and how some of it can be bullies, and Hollywood is great at that. I also think too, as much as you were saying all that and making some of those points, it made me realize we're the type of people that knew what Studio Canal was back when they didn't have the money to release things here in North America. So you're exactly right. Studio Canal was a powerhouse in Europe and still had to find a partner in North America to get any of those projects over here. Now, some people know them because you'll see them as even like the second or even third production company at the beginning of a movie when they made all of the money off that movie again in Europe. So I forget that there are a lot more people that are going to go to the theaters and see Godzilla versus Kong than we're going to sit here and watch this independent film we just mentioned. I
think normal people that aren't us don't get excited for the next A24 drop unless it's a big horror movie, you know?
I know. That's fair. See, that's fair. You made me realize some of that too. The other thing that it made me think of too, and I didn't pose this when we were writing the questions or think of it, is what the pandemic might do, because the question at the bottom here says pandemic's just impact on independent film. We talked about how it's possible we'll see more and more of those mainstream movies go quicker to home video or even day and date releases. Does that open up some of the smaller screens in those bigger theaters for movies like this? So maybe that's an option. Yeah. I think this question actually just opened up a whole can of new questions.
Yeah, there's a lot of things we can talk about. And then just also the thing is, are there going to be available screens for things like this? Because like we talked about last week, Warner Brothers making that exclusivity deal with Regal so that their movies can be in theaters before they're streaming, but only one set of theaters. So someone else, you have to do, it's like television stations doing competitive. What's the word? What's the word they used to use when two TV shows are up against each other in the same time slot? You have to do like counter programming. Like, how do you counter program if the new Warner Brothers, the new DC movie is only shown in Regals? If I'm Cinemark, or I'm not Cinemark, if I'm AMC, what do I counter program against, you know, the new Batman movie? So
right.
I think that's something
great
to look at. So, and maybe foreign films are a way to go. I mean, here's the thing, like small independent films are come and go in waves. And like, it's a studio like an A24 or a Legendary that has to like, or Fox Searchlight that has to, you know, really pop with one, but like, they're not going anywhere. But I'm glad it's easier for more people to see these kind of films now, whether it be, you know, another round or a Minari or a whatever it needs to be. So
right,
I guess we'll see.
Sure. All right.
Okay. So last time we were talking, We talked about DC Comics jacking up the price on all their main titles to where, what is it now? $7 to buy $6.99 to buy a comic?
Yeah, it was either $6 or $6.99. Yeah.
So this seemed to be, we kind of framed it as this is DC's last leg. They're trying to find a way to get out of print comic books. If not comic books in general, at least printing physical comic books.
Right.
But every time DC seems to be on life support, they do something and find a way to turn it around. You know, Batman titles are selling really hot right now. Suicide Squad characters are flying off the shelf, especially with the new trailer and the new movie coming. Green Lantern is back with a launch issue that got a ton of good press. A lot of the critics fawning over the new Green Lantern title. What should we expect with Warner Brothers and DC in the near future when it comes to the actual comics industry? I mean, the actual comics of DC.
I think they're still trying to get out of the print game, and they're going to find a way. But if you know, money talks, especially to corporations, right? I think what blindsided me and what made me pose adding this to today's topics was that the Green Lantern comic just returned, and it's Green Lantern, but it's focusing on the core. It's following off on multiple people. You've got Kyle Rayner in it. You've got Hal Jordan. You're introducing, you know, queer characters and things like that. The Green Lantern has really been DC's embrace of diversity, would probably be the best word to use there. And for it to pop out this month and reviewers just to, I don't think I've seen a bad comment on it yet, is surprising, because as much as again, this kind of goes to the independent film thing, we know Green Lantern a lot, but he's really a second tier DC character if you really get down to it. The huge thing is Batman's back up to like there's the Nightwing titles. There's like five different there's the Batman, the Batman group one. I can't even remember what it's called. Like there's
the Bat Family. I don't know what they call
it. There's so much Batman going on.
Is it Bat Inc. or Batman Inc.?
Like something like that. And there's so much of them going on, and they're selling. And maybe it is the hype for the Snyder Cut and the Snyder Cut or anything like that. So I think DC is still going to do what we talked about last time. They're going to play the game until they have a valid excuse to say, you forced our hand. Because they don't want to be the ones that just take comics away from nerds. Because if anything we've learned is nerds can tear people up on the internet and they will roast the company hard. But they want to get to that point to, like we said, where they drive up the price and you either buy it and it covers the bills, or you don't buy it. And then they can say, you quit buying our comics, we can't print them. So I still think that's the direction going. What I would like to see to add to that is do what Marvel's doing. Like Warner Brothers, you make a shit ton of money. Disney makes, I know Disney makes a lot more, but Disney funnels that money into getting known names, artists and creators, and relaunching titles on Marvel Comics that usually coincide with what's happening in their cinematic universe or series now. That's what DC should be doing. And you're seeing it with Suicide Squad. So just embrace it and do it.
Yeah, I think that's a big one, is like finding talent, finding new talent, finding fresh talent, because that's one thing Marvel's really done well over the years, is like the number of times you pull up a comic of Marvel and you said, who wrote this? And you're like, how did they get this person to? And you find out, number one, there's a ton of creatives that grew up on comic books, and no matter how prolific or amazing or lauded they become, like it's still their dream to like, I want to write a comic book. Like, I mean, you know that, we know that better than just about anyone. Like that's a dream for some people, no matter how successful you be. So finding ways to do it. I don't know. There was a period of time where I really believed DC was trying to make it work. Like the DC Unlimited that I subscribed to, where it was like, here's some shows, but it's also digital access to all the comic books. And you could do this and read that. And it didn't work, obviously. And then they folded everything into HBO Max, and it's this and that. I mean, it's funny. This question came up because I was just having a conversation with a friend. I went to Micro Center the other day to pick up some thermal paste and a PC cooler because I was building a new computer. And while I was waiting in checkout, I haven't been in a Micro Center in a year. They have the big line of magazines that you can buy, and PC Gamer and all those. First of all, two things I learned. Number one, 2600 is still a thing, Hacker Quarterly, and they still print it physically and sell it at Micro Center, as well as Heavy Metal is still a physical magazine you can buy, in case anyone was wondering. But I think there's still a market for physical comic books, just from a collector standpoint and a physical, like wanting to own a thing. Just like there's, you know, as long as people are willing to buy a pop vinyl, I feel like they're still willing to buy a physical comic book. So I don't, but you're right. Like the dollars and cents of it are getting harder and harder to justify as time goes on. And I feel like I don't know that DC will ever get out of the physical print of comic book business, but I could see them getting out of the physical print comic book business outside of like on demand. I could see it being like an on demand printing, like an Amazon style thing. Like you order the comic book, we send it to you. That's literally the only way to get a physical one. We're not going to make reams of them and send them to comic book stores. I think that might, I don't know that there'll ever be a day when you can't buy a physical comic book. I couldn't believe there would be a day where you can't go into a comic book store and buy a physical comic book for certain comic book companies like a DC or even just certain titles. Maybe DC's like, we print Batman comics and we print these on in bulk and everything else is like on demand or digital. Right. So,
yeah, we're supposed to be arguing here, but I'm going to say you made another great point there because what you made me think of too was, is just as much as Warner Brothers and is, you know, doing this on the comic side, Warner Brothers and all the studios are really doing this on the movie side. They're really pushing to get it all digital because it's cheaper for them. It's so much cheaper. And to be honest, as many movies as I have, there are countless times I can even say that I didn't pull out the binder or the disc and I just turned it on the streaming service. However, I think like us and other nerds, the types of people that would be listening to a Versus podcast on Project Nerd are the types of people that want that physical media. I still
a comic book hanging literally right behind me. Right. I still want certain physical. I mean, there's also a giant bookshelf behind me and I own a Kindle. I can buy all my books digitally. I choose not to because, you know, there are certain things I just want to own.
What do you want?
Yeah,
you
right
want?
There.
I got it all. Yeah. Got it all. Right.
Exactly. That's one of those things. It's like, there's going to always be demand for it, but I could see a world where the demand is not enough to like, or you do limited run prints of things like that. Like it's like a book, like there was a first, I mean, not that they don't do that now, but I think you could just see, especially with both them and Marvel no longer dealing with Diamond, they don't have to have like these minimum number of copies or number of prints sold. They're just like, yeah, we printed this many of them. And if you got one, you got one. If not, cool, wait for the trade and or here's how to get it digitally and or you can order it and we'll print it on demand for you, but it won't be as high quality of the first edition run that we did of it or something like that. Right. So.
Okay. Good point. All right. Well, that's it for our big questions. So you know what time that, or you know what that means. It's time for some
quick hits, quick hits. Awesome. The Rock reported Black Adam starts filming next week. Any big DC cameos happening in this movie?
I think we know at least one that's likely. I would assume Shazam, right?
Exactly. I would assume has to show up in it at some point.
But I don't know. Maybe this is the one because didn't Henry Cavill sign that like deal to where he shows up in other movies as Superman, but not doing any more Superman films? So maybe.
Who knows? I love Henry Cavill. I mean, more things he's in, the better, as far as I'm concerned. Where's my Witcher season 2?
All right. Well, it's a new month. PlayStation Plus just dropped their free games in April. Odd World, Soulstorm, Days Gone, and Zombie Army 4, Dead War. Which one are you most excited about?
Definitely a zombie-ish theme here, but I was always an Odd World kind of guy. So
yeah,
definitely Odd World, Soulstorm. I never played Soulstorm, but I love Odd World. So
right, I haven't played that one. Abe's Odyssey obviously was a classic and loved it when you chug the soda and then make the belch noise and everything. Always fun.
Disney's live-action Little Mermaid starring Halle Berry will finally start filming on the Italian island of Sardinia, known for its crystal-clear emerald waters. This made me wonder, what's the best live-action Disney film to date?
First of all,
are we specifically saying any live-action Disney film, or are we specifically saying live-action adaptation of a pre-existing animated film?
Let's go with the remakes. Let's go with those remakes. Okay. I really enjoyed Aladdin. I think Will Smith did a decent job, and I think they did all right with that one.
I'm going to go get Jungle Book. Jungle Book was a lot of fun.
Okay.
I don't particularly like any of the live-action remakes. They feel a little bit unnecessary. But at the same time, here's the thing. I like them exactly as much. They're just like a lesser version of their originals. So right. Like the Aladdin was a lot of fun, but I really liked it because I like the original Aladdin. With the auto-tuning aside, I liked the Beauty and the Beast because I like Beauty and the Beast, the animated movie. It's one of those things where like you watch it and you're like, well, that was fun, but I could have just watched the animated one and got the exact same, if not a better version of it. So, right. But I'm going to go Lion King. Lion King was cool.
Okay.
Not Lion King. Jungle Book. Lion King was cool too, but Jungle Book was better.
Right. All right. Lenovo's introducing their new gaming phone, Legion Phone 2 Pro. And it's the images have leaked. It's expected to be in China this month. This thing is huge. Like, I'm talking like size of my keyboard down here. Huge. Obviously, there's going to be some kind of market for it. But is this something that's going to be in high demand? Or, and more importantly, how much are people going to pay for this?
I get that a lot of people play games on their phones. I mean, I play games on my phones too. I don't know that I need a gaming phone. Any game that I'm going to play that requires like a gaming phone, then I need to be playing it on a console or a computer. So right. If it's not Candy Crush, or if it's not something I can swipe with one hand and play, like
casual gaming.
I mean, I've played some even non-casual games. There's a new game in Apple Arcade right now from the Mistwalker Studios, which is the studios founded by like the original creator of Final Fantasy, called Fantasian. It's right. Beautiful, fantastic, a JRPG. It's definitely more than what you would expect from a mobile game, but it's perfectly fine to play on a phone. Whereas anything that I need special hard phone to play is, I mean, people have tried gaming phones before, and I think they've all always failed. So
right, what's the price tag on this guy?
I don't even know. What is it?
Well, that's what I'm getting. That's our guess.
I mean, it's got to be at least $1,500 minimum.
Okay. I'll say somewhere around.
I mean, top of the line iPhone right now starts at $1,100. So it's right. Got to be more than that. I mean, top of the line iPhone without buying extra storage starts at like $1,000, $1,100. It's got to be more than that, right?
Right.
I would think.
Yeah.
So for all of you friends of robots and bad movies out there, Mystery Science Theater 3000 is on Kickstarter again for another go round, funding even more episodes. How excited are you, my friend?
I'm excited. I just don't understand. Why do they need our, like, is it really still struggling for money? Did Netflix not give them enough?
I'm assuming what? Did Netflix pull the, like, is it still, is, are they getting this money to go on Netflix? Did Netflix pull the plug? What's the story there?
We should have probably done some more research on this, but if I remember correctly, that last season that was on Netflix, they said no more. So now that we're seeing this, I'm wondering if it is to get it like independently funded again. And maybe it is one of those things to where if you get the audience behind it, then they'll.
Joel Hodgson has started this because Netflix, the version of it on Netflix has been canceled. He wants to try again, Newcomb, and it will be. Yes. So it's the Netflix version is canceled. This is money for it to make of themselves, and then they will distribute it themselves.
Okay.
Like
okay.
They're going to try to raise enough money to develop their own app to then bring it to all the streaming devices out there. So.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Now I am more excited now that you said all that. I think you were, well, I'm excited in the first place, but I'm pretty sure you were
too. If they raise $3.3 million, they're going to be able to develop apps that bring their own, the Gizmoplex, which is their own virtual online theater where they can host frequent live screenings, premieres, and community events. And you can watch all the shows yourself.
Okay. Now I'm super excited.
A lot of the funding
the perks
are pretty cool, but like they want a lot of money for them. But I don't know. I'm a Kickstarter junkie. You're looking at someone who has 15 plus funded and undelivered board games funded on Kickstarter, at least at any given moment. So it is what it is. So.
Right. All right. Well, we got new trailers this week. Two big ones to mention were series ones, Netflix's Jupiter's Legacy and Disney's Plus's Loki. Excited about either one of those or both? I don't know.
Jupiter's Legacy is one of those things where the comic book is okay. It's one of those ones where like I love some of Mark Millar's stuff, but sometimes he just can't overcome his own worst impulses. I think it'll be great. I think it'll be fine. The trailer looks okay. It looks a little bit run of the mill. I'm real pumped about Loki. Like I was kind of like, yeah, it'll be whatever. But the newest trailer for Loki makes it look like a lot of fun. So
I'm in agreement with you here again. The new Loki trailer sold me after I was a little bit hesitant because we were getting so much Loki. As for Jupiter's Legacy, what excites me the most here is that this is the first step in that Netflix Millar agreement. So it leads to those other Millar titles. So
yeah. If you want a comic book streaming, an original comic book streaming service, Invincible has just now started streaming on
Amazon.
Amazon Plus or Amazon Plus, Amazon Prime. So you definitely check that out. That's based on Robert Kirkman's comic book. That's a lot of fun. It's a super interesting take on superheroes. And I mean, there's a million takes on them, but like J.K. Simmons plays Omni-Man, who's the like Superman, you know, analog in this story. It looks, it's a lot of fun. So I watched the first episode. It's off to a good start already. So, so we got a little last one. This one was a little, it hurt my soul a little bit. We got a clip from a clip from the movie Ghostbusters Afterlife. That movie is still coming out. Apparently did these, I mean, I've already buried the lead. I've already spoiled the lead on this. It definitely ruined it. Did the mini Stay Puft Marshmallow Men ruin the chances of this being even worth a ticket?
I didn't even finish the clip. It was terrible. I was already not 100% sold on this. I was excited when it got announced because, right, we got Reitman. We got Little Reitman, I guess. And we've got Paul Rudd and it, very Stranger Things feel, right? But the more and more that we see or learn about this, the less I am getting excited.
I honestly, when I first started watching it, I thought maybe it was like a tie-in commercial for something. Because it's the tone is just so off the wall versus because like they've been very big on like we're going to capture the same spirit as the original. And this is not that, at least. Yeah. I mean, if the rest of the movie is anything like this clip, I have not high hopes for it.
That's fair. That's fair.
I hate to end our podcast on a low note, but oof. Oof.
Well, there we go. Well, that's it for our quick hits, and that's it for our questions on Versus. As always, if you have something to you disagree with one of us, you want to see us argue on something more, you can always give us feedback or leave your suggestions on topics anywhere you get your Project Nerd podcast or over on our social media pages. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and we can take your feedback all those places. As always, you can head on over to projectnerd.com/podcast. That's project-nerd.com/podcasts, as in plural, to check out all of our amazing podcast series. We have over 12 awesome series. And if you're enjoying this video, I don't know if you've noticed, we are pumping out the video content on YouTube. So you can either get to those videos via Project Nerd or head on over to YouTube and search Project Nerd there as well. Subscribe, enjoy, leave comments there. We've got some great content. The CF3 guys are pumping it out. We've got some of the new Nerdcast recasts that are going to be with some special guests on there. I'm Not Famous comes back, and I'm excited about that one because I'm in it.
I mean, I'm Not Famous. I'm excited to coming back. That's one of the Project Nerd podcasts I actually listen to.
There you go. Carrie's always
a lot of them, so I don't listen to them. So. Right? I miss Carrie as well. So
yeah,
you can skip busy. The last word. The last word is fixed. It's rigged. It's terrible.
Q knocked him out of the first round there. I lost too. So
I decided I deserved to get kicked out in the last round because I definitely buffed it on the I have two very good friends from Chicago. One of them is a diehard White Sox fan, and the other is not. And I definitely just was. I just really wanted to make fun of Gallo, and it seemed like an easy thing to do because I was just angry at the White Sox because they've been playing, they look really good this year, and it upsets me because I need my Royals to do winning. So, but yes, you kicked me out in the first. Did you kick me out in the first round?
Maybe the second round.
It's fixed. It's terrible. It's a bad show. I want to host the last roll at some point just so I can kick someone off the show.
We'll let you host with Q and I, so then you have to make the tough choice.
Fun.
There you go. All right. Well, that's it for Versus.
Project-nerd.com. So many good podcasts. And The Last World actually is pretty good. You should listen to it. So
there you go. Awesome. Well, Tyler, thank you. For everybody else, we'll see you next time.
See you guys next time.